very welcome to the latest episode of African Research Excellence DSW in Conversation. My name is Owen Walsh and I'm joined as usual by my co-host Augustine Martin. How are you, Augustine?
All good here. How are you, Owen?
I'm very good. As usual, on the podcast today, we have researchers coming from Africa working in African research, particularly in the field of global health research and innovation, working on the front line of research into medicines, vaccines, and treatments for diseases like HIV, AIDS, TB, malaria, and many other neglected infectious diseases that affect millions of people around the world. Augustine, before our guests come on the line, maybe you could just introduce them.
So we're very, very, very happy to be joined today by Sibo Siso Hlatwacho, who's the Advocacy and Partnership Manager of PATH in South Africa. Sibo Siso is the former Public Affairs Director of IADAS, and he has over 15 years of professional experience in public health. He has a bachelor's degree in nursing science and a master's of public health epidemiology and biostatistics of the University of Pretoria in South Africa. We're also joined by Professor Geoffrey Setsue, who is the managing director from the Implementation Research Division at the Aurum Institute in Johannesburg. Professor Setsue has previously served as an adjunct professor in public health at the University of Venda, and he is also former executive director for the HIV/AIDS and Tuberculosis Research Program at the Human Sciences Research Council. Professor Setsue has a Doctor of Public Health degree from the University of Limpopo, and his Master's of Public Health degree was obtained from Temple University in Philadelphia in the United States of America, where he was a Fulbright Scholar in the 1990s.
Professor Setsue, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
We're delighted to have you on. Before we get really into the nitty-gritty, maybe you could just give a little bit of a background on what your work is and what you're doing at the moment.
I'm currently employed as Managing Director for the Implementation Research Division at the Aurum Institute based in Johannesburg. My role is to develop research on implementation research on HIV and tuberculosis and now on COVID-19. I come from a background in public health, and so implementation research has been part of my work in my previous work.
I mean, it's quite interesting. Obviously, you've been working for a long term on issues like HIV, AIDS, TB, and other diseases. How much has that changed in the last, let's say, 3 months? You mentioned COVID-19.
Our work has been impacted a lot by COVID-19, but we have used the experience that we had gotten in responding to HIV and TB in Southern Africa and in Africa as a whole. So COVID-19 is benefiting from the work that was done to respond to TB and HIV/AIDS. There are also the negative sides where a lot of focus was put up on COVID-19 response and at the expense of TB and HIV/AIDS. But recently, the Department of Health in South Africa has recognized that, and they have sent out notes and letters to indicate that patients on treatment for TB and HIV should get back to the health services and to also ensure that they comply with their treatments.
It's interesting. I mean, one of the questions that we've been asking some of our guests on the show is how the research that they've been doing on other diseases has influenced the work on COVID-19, for example. Research capacity that has been built up to work on vaccines or treatments for HIV, then being repurposed for COVID-19. Are you seeing that as well in South Africa?
Yes, we're seeing that in South Africa. For example, the gene expert that was used for diagnosis of tuberculosis has been repurposed for COVID-19 diagnosis. And we know that the National Institute of Communicable Diseases in South Africa is using a separate cartridge for repurposed specifically for diagnosing COVID-19. But it's not only that, you know, there are other areas of research where we see that the technologies that were developed for HIV/AIDS and or tuberculosis, you know, are being checked if they are working for COVID-19. We know about the treatment of malaria that is now being the hydroxychloroquine, which is being now tested, you know, whether it works for COVID-19. The positive news that we heard this week about dexamethasone, which is can reduce mortality among patients who are on COVID-19 treatment, and especially those that are on, if they are being intubated and they are put up on oxygen treatment. Dexamethasone reduces mortality by one third. And so it's treatments that have been available before that are being repurposed, and other drugs like remdesivir, Galetra are drugs that have been around, you know, for some time, and they are now being repurposed specifically for COVID-19. So the work that was done on the biomedical interventions for responding to HIV/AIDS and TB and malaria are now being used, you know, for benefiting COVID-19.
That's really interesting. Augustine, I have one more question before maybe then you can dive in. Professor Sitwick, maybe you can tell us like what the situation is on the ground in South Africa right now. I mean, both in terms of the traditional work you've been doing with HIV, malaria, and TB, and then also maybe more broadly, what impact the pandemic has had on tackling those diseases in country in the country.
Yeah, firstly, the burden of HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis are very high in South Africa. South Africa has got one of the, actually, it's the highest burden of HIV/AIDS in the world, and we are also in the top five with regard to the burden of tuberculosis. And so the response has been amazing from both the non-governmental sector, PATH, Oram Institute, and many other non-governmental and governmental organizations have contributed to the reduction and the response to HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis. I'll just give you a few examples. You know, the development and implementation of health technologies for the diagnosis of HIV/AIDS and TB, and now COVID-19. There are a few examples. The HIV-1 rapid testing has improved dramatically through the use of an Asante rapid recency assay test. So we can now in Africa know whether somebody was infected with HIV/AIDS, you know, in the last year, or has been infected longer than that, so that we can also identify hotspots, you know, for HIV/AIDS. We also have got several new self-tests, you know, that are replacing the old oral swab test, where you would have to wait for your results for 20 minutes. The INSTI is an example of a rapid self-test, which can take about 2 minutes. And in that 2 minutes, you do a finger prick, and following a finger prick, you will know your diagnosis, you know. And I spoke about the gene expert for tuberculosis, that in the past we used to wait for to take up a sputum and take it to the lab, wait for 2 or 3 weeks before you know the results. And in the meantime, the person is infecting others. But the gene expert can give you the results, you know, on the spot, on the same day for tuberculosis. So, and we have repurposed that gene expert machine, you know, for COVID-19 in this part of the world. And we've also developed technologies for measuring viral suppression. At the Oram Institute, we had field tested something called the plasma separation cart. It is a new technology using a finger prick. Instead of taking intravenous blood and taking it to the lab, you know, in a cold chain, you simply do a finger prick and take some specimen and put it in an envelope, and you take it to the lab, and you can get the results on the same day. You don't have to wait for several days, and you don't have to go through an arduous cold chain process that takes a lot of resources. But there's also, we've seen a dramatic increase in the ART treatment uptake. In South Africa, we've got the largest treatment program for HIV/AIDS, you know, with over 4.5 million people of the 7.9 million people on treatment. So, you know, the NGOs and other organizations have helped South Africa to have this large treatment program. And we are using, among others, you know, digital adherence technologies for antiretroviral and TB treatment. And I can talk about that a little later. You know, and there has been an impressive uptake of a prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV/AIDS to a point of elimination. You know, our target is to eliminate the mother-to-child transmission. And there has been very good advocacy, very good policy support. And we also have used the digital adherence technologies to support, you know, mothers to take up treatment. We've also used advocacy measures to get men to participate in programs for mother-to-child transmission of HIV/AIDS.
So, Sibusiso, I'm curious to learn a little bit about first your role and responsibility in PATH. I mean, we've introduced briefly your background, but PATH draws on more than 35 years of experience in combating HIV and TB through research and development. So, I would like to know, what contributions are you most proud of in this PATH trajectory, and what can you tell us in the changes in the field? In HIV, TB, or other poverty-related neglected diseases in South Africa? What do you think has improved, and what are the most pressing challenges in the next years?
All right. Thank you for that, Augustine. My name is Busiso. As you've rightly said, I'm the Advocacy and Partnerships Manager at PATH. I joined PATH about a year ago. Now, in terms of PATH itself, you've rightly mentioned it's an organization that's been working in the innovation space for more than 40 years. And the question of what contributions am I mostly proud of? I think PATH has done a sterling job actually in several areas, particularly in developing, introducing, and improving healthcare systems through innovative vaccines, diagnostics, drugs, and devices. So they could be the many areas that I'll say I'm proud of in terms of the work that PATH has done, including the work that PATH continues to do in health system strengthening across the globe, providing advice to global institutions such as the WHO and the African Union throughout the NEPAD. But if I were to pick probably one contribution that I'll say I'm proud of, it is the work that PATH has done in terms of or contributing to vaccine innovations, and that is working with partners across development, delivery, and impact. And I'm saying I'm proud of this because it's work that has ensured that communities are protected from infectious diseases, and that vaccine coverage and equity is increased. And also, this has contributed in solving country-specific problems, particularly for developing countries, and also strengthening immunization and primary health care. So just to be very specific in terms of the things that when I look at the work that PATH has done over the years, make my heart warm or make me even proud to be associated with the work that PATH does, it is more on the work that PATH has done in vaccine vial monitors and auto disposable syringes. I mean, which is these have been produced. More than 7 billion of these have been produced. But this makes me proud because I've worked in a healthcare setting myself. I've seen how important it is to ensure that, particularly immunizations are maintained. The cold chain is maintained, sustained, delivered in an effective manner. And if not, you then risk the country or countries having a resurgence of some of the eliminated diseases. So that will set the healthcare system back. But also, it shows how important it is the work that we do in protecting the most vulnerable in our communities. That is, women and children as well. So if you ask me, what am I proud of in terms of the work that PATH has done? It is the fact that PATH has been involved on end-to-end in terms of supporting vaccine development, and also in terms of supporting healthcare systems around the delivery of vaccines. It's not just the science that we've been involved with in terms of the development of the vaccines. It is also ensuring that It is also ensuring that the healthcare systems in the countries where the vaccines are needed most are prepared for the vaccines, ensuring that the systems that support the delivery of vaccines are responsive and aligned to what is needed by countries. It is developing solutions with in-country teams and in-country governments and in-country people, and also working with entities like WHO to ensure that those interventions or innovations are in line and meet the highest global standards. So I think that would be my response to what are some of the things that PATH has done that I am proud of.
Yeah, I mean that's very, very interesting, because I mean, as you know, in Europe and in the US in recent years, we've seen alarming levels of vaccine hesitancy and you know, anti-vax movements, and of course followed by increased rates of vaccine preventable diseases in continents such as measles, as you mentioned. So I was curious to learn about whether this is also happening in South Africa, and what is PATH doing in terms of, and you know, PATH's coalition, are you doing in terms of contributing to inform and empower citizens and communities about the value of vaccines as one of the most important public health tools that we have?
So the work that we do in South Africa is limited in that it's mostly on health R&D advocacy. In the past, we've worked in the space of maternal child health, which includes support in terms of programs, in terms of vaccines and the provision of vaccines. But currently, the work that we do focuses more on health R&D advocacy, and that involves advocating for health systems, advocating for the regulatory in terms of approval of new products, which of course includes vaccines. Currently, we are looking. I mean, the world is working on a COVID-19 vaccine, and we are looking in terms of how do we work or collaborate with government and partners such as Oram as well, a part of the coalition that PATH is a secretariat to. And one of the things that we're looking at is how will we influence policies to ensure that the country is prepared for innovations such as vaccines, and not only vaccines, but other health innovations. We are currently having discussions with the national regulatory and other partners and stakeholders in terms of how does it get itself prepared for some of the shortages that are anticipated with the advent of COVID-19. How do we work as a country in terms of ensuring that the country is prepared for when a vaccine is going to come? So we're working at what should be the policies that are needed to ensure that we are prepared for when a vaccine comes. I think that's part of the work that we are doing in terms of vaccines preparedness as a country. But generally, we work with, I'll just go to what you've mentioned already, which is the coalition. We work with more than 20 organizations in terms of advocating for health R&D. And our advocacy initiatives, they're broad. I mean, they focus on not just one or two or three disease areas, but they focus across the healthcare spectrum. We look at financing. We look at investments into health R&D. We look at the capacity of local organizations, civil society organizations, and their knowledge of health R&D. Basically, build their capacity and also make them aware of the important policies around health R&D in South Africa and the need for advocacy, and build their capacity to advocate for health R&D products, and then also work in the space of ensuring that there is a regulated and harmonized regulatory system, so that the products that are provided are safer products, and we do that through working closely with the national regulatory. And I'm mentioning this because particularly the regulatory aspect of it does speak to the issues around vaccines. Now, Augustine, that being said, I'll just move on to what you have asked around TB and HIV, to say the field has changed and what challenges remain, particularly in South Africa. So basically, I mean, if you look at the HIV journey that the country has taken from the time when the country couldn't access antiretroviral therapy for different reasons, including political reasons. I think we have come a long way as a country, and I think, firstly, the country has done really well. We've got the biggest HIV program in the world. We've got more than 7 million people that are living with HIV, and we're in a space where HIV is no longer a death sentence, more so because of the availability of more effective and tolerable drugs. So I think in terms of that, that speaks volumes to what the country has been able to do, and also what the world has been able to do. And then the same can be said with tuberculosis as well. I mean, we're coming from it's a quickly evolving space. We've got drug resistant TB of different forms. And I think if you look at it from 2-3 years ago, if you had drug-resistant TB, you're looking at taking treatment for a minimum of 24 months with severe side effects. So South Africa as a country, I think has really been at the center in terms of the innovations for both TB and HIV, in terms of the R&D that has gone in terms of the investments that have gone in, both by local and international partners, including several donors that have been part of this, including even European and American organizations and entities and governments. So I think in terms of where we are, there's quite a lot that has been done. That being said, there's still quite a number of challenges that still remain. We're still in a world that doesn't have a vaccine for TB. The current vaccine that we have is BCG. It's more than 100 years old, and it's shown to be not as effective, particularly in adults, even though it's been shown to be effective in children. But they still, the world still needs a better vaccine. HIV, we still don't have a vaccine. And if you ask me what needs to be done, I think there's still a need for more resources. I think if we get a vaccine for any of these diseases, that would be the biggest public health impact. I mean, that's going to be an investment. That will be an investment that will have the biggest public health impact, because then you stop the new infections from occurring. Actually, you move rapidly towards eliminating these diseases that are proving to be a continuous threat in South Africa. So, I mean, if you speak of TB, you're speaking of infection rates of above 300,000 per year. The last statistics that we looked at, we had more than 60,000 deaths that attributed to tuberculosis. So it is something that it is a problem, or these are problems that the country's public health system and the economy continues to face. And then in terms of what needs to be done, I think they still remain a very big need for advocacy, both nationally and globally, for more resources to be pulled into fund towards finding solutions towards TB and HIV. So I think that would be my response. And then how is PATH involved in this? We are a secretariat to a coalition, as I've mentioned, of more than 20 organizations that work in advocacy, and we continue to advocate for health R&D. We continue to build the capacity on the ground in terms of people understanding and communities understanding the need for health R&D, what health R&D is about and why it is important. We continue to engage with policymakers around issues of policies around health affecting health R&D. We continue to engage with policymakers on issues around the need for financing or for resources that should be channeled towards health R&D. We continue to engage scientists in terms of what are the challenges that they encounter in their implementing of clinical research, clinical trials, development of devices and new tools, and find ways, innovative ways, in terms of how do we engage all key stakeholders to work together towards common solutions.
Yeah, and this is of course where the collaboration with the Aurum Institute also is critical. And I wanted to get back to what Professor Setsu said about the mother-to-child transmission and HIV and some news that are in the field through e-health technologies. So, Professor Setsu, tell us a little bit more about what's happening on that field, because for the European Union, one of the overarching political priorities for the next year is going to be really digitization, and the digitalizing health is going to be a critical tool to make some public health impact. I mean, we're seeing it now with COVID-19, where we all have basically become digital animals, and you know our lives are dependent on e-technologies. So what's going on in terms of the reduction of mother to child HIV, and what role can these digital tools play in that area?
We have made extensive progress in reducing mother to child transmission of HIV/AIDS in Southern Africa. Because we have used a variety of approaches. Initially, we started with policy advocacy, and then we went on to look at technologies. And these technologies range from, you know, the digital adherence technologies that are used. They are all based on the fact that the prevalence of cell phones is very high in this part of the world. Almost everyone in this part of the world, you know, more than 90% of people would have a cell phone. And with a cell phone, you are able to link up with people in their own homes. And you avoid everybody coming to the clinics to be supervised for taking treatment. The old-fashioned way of having a health professional sitting at the clinic and a patient coming in and they get advice on how to take their treatment is no longer sufficing. And so these technologies are interchangeably used between HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis. And let me talk about three of the exciting technologies that are being used, that we call the digital adherence technologies for TB and HIV treatment adherence. We have a project called ASCEND, which is an abbreviation for Adherence Support Coalition to End TB, Empowering Patients Through Technology. This project is using digital adherence technology for TB treatment adherence. So in the next 2 years, in 2020 and 2021, this ASCEND project is working collaboratively with the National TB Program in South Africa to facilitate adoption of an open source TB adherence platform, which is capable of supporting the use of WHO-approved digital adherence technology. And these are, about three of them are being used. One is called the 99 Dots Sleeves, where you send a phone call or an SMS to a person to remind them to take their treatment. Or you can use an EveryMed medication monitor, which is a SIM-enabled sensor where, for example, the medication is kept in a monitor, and as they open the monitor, it locks on the database. And if the database does not record a locking at the time that the patient indicated that they are on treatment, then you know there is a reminder that is sent on the cell phone of a patient to remind the patient to take their medication. The third one is called Sure Adhere, which is video supported treatment, so that the person a video is shown when a person is taking treatment, and this is recorded in the database, and you are sure that the patient has taken the medication. And these are the three approaches that are currently being tested at the moment for TB adherence. The second one is a project called TB Mate, which is also an abbreviation for TB Monitoring Adherence and Treatment Endpoints. This one uses monitors and a differentiated care approach to improve TB adherence. So in this project, we implement and evaluate the use of an adherence monitoring system, what we call a wise pill, EveryMed, that I discussed earlier on, where you have a patient with a device, and the medication is kept in a device. As they open the device, the wise pill device, it will record and indicate if a patient is. So we are actually testing this among drug-sensitive TB patients in three of the provinces of South Africa. So These are very clever systems, very innovative, and very exciting programs where we are able to follow patients. There's a new project that is coming up, and it's funded from the US. It's called a two-way texting intervention. Two-way texting is for patients who have just undergone male circumcision, and to ensure that they do not develop side effects, you'd send out a daily automated text message to the patient, and to determine if the patient has got any side effects. So if a patient gets the message, they would say, you would ask the question, you know, do you have bleeding? Do you have swelling? Do you have any of these symptoms of following a circumcision? And then the patient will respond either with a yes or a no. And if the answer is a yes, they would indicate what the problem is, whether there is pain or swelling or bleeding or something like that. And then the nurse will text or call the patient to triage and refer the patient. So the patient, when they come to the clinic, they don't have to stand in a line like everybody else. They already are triaged to go and see a doctor or a nurse and to get treatment. If they need to be admitted in hospital, all arrangements are made for them not to stand in a line and waste any more time. If they are at work, then they can actually come after work, or they can come before they go to work to get some treatment. And so this does not affect their time. So I was sharing about all these technologies because these technologies are being tested here in this part of the world. And we learned, a lot from HIV/AIDS, and now we have taken this also to TB, and we would obviously test this on COVID-19. Patients that are not supposed to be coming to the hospital and making the clinics and hospital to be full, you would use these digital adherence technologies to check if a patient who tested positive for COVID-19 is connected with the health services through a cell phone or through some other form of digital technology, and you check whether they are getting on well, they're getting cured for COVID-19, whether the symptoms are subsiding, and if they need to be taken back into a hospital for admission and further care, you can do that. So we have seen a lot of advancement in digitization and ensuring that patients are reached out, and especially during the time when we do not need many patients to get infected with other diseases while they're at the health services.
It is quite remarkable the amount of initiatives that are ongoing in this area, and I think it's worth noticing that, as mentioned, the EU is prioritizing information communication technologies in sub-Saharan Africa more and more. One of the areas that I've been working on was precisely the harmonization of policy and regulatory initiatives or tools for Digital Africa. And this was financed by the Pan-African Program, which is the continental envelope of the Development Cooperation Program of the EU. And also, the European Union is investing a little bit more in this area through its research framework program, Horizon 2020, soon to be Horizon Europe. So one example was that last year they launched a call specifically on supporting the deployment of e-health technologies in low and middle income countries in sub-Saharan Africa for improving health outcomes. So this really shows that I think the EU is recognizing the talent and the capacities in the continent in e-health technologies. And they are realizing that there is a great need and opportunity to seize all that and improve public health. So extremely interesting to learn about all these initiatives that you're working in.
It's really a fascinating insight into what's happening on the ground. We're getting close to wrapping up, but before we go, I want to swing back around to one of the points that Sibusiso made about the importance of donors. And it's a question for both of you. If you had one thing that you thought would be the best approach or the best policy change that the European Union could do to help the work that you both are doing right now on the ground, so much that we've discussed today, what would that be? Sibusiso, maybe you can go first, and Professor Sitzway, maybe you can follow up then.
All right. several things that I would propose, but since you are looking for only one, I think one of the issues that African countries continue to grapple with is that of harmonized regulations in terms of the introduction of new products, be it diagnostics, vaccines, devices, and drugs. So developing countries will, in some instances, take several years before their national regulatory authorities are able to introduce new products, even after they've been introduced in first world countries, even if it's for diseases that are more prevalent in developing countries. So one of the things that, if you ask me what the European governments could support, it would support towards regulatory harmonization, and that is building the capacity of the national regulatory authorities at national level, at regional level, and at continental level, so that people in developing countries are not subjected to falsified medicines or to delayed medicines in terms of interventions that entities such as Oram or the entities that are supported by EDCTP have worked so hard in terms of the research, and then they are not able to get those products. So I think if there is one area that I will pick, it's a difficult pick, but I'll pick that of supporting the work around capacitating the continent in terms of being able to regulate medicines. Thank you.
Yeah, for me, I would like to see improved funding for clinical and implementation research for HIV, AIDS, TB, and also to include NCDs like diabetes, hypertension, cancers, and also the new infectious diseases like COVID-19. So the clinical and implementation research is important because now I have indicated to you the many, many pilot tests. And, you know, we have tested the vaccines. We have tested the technologies for diagnosis of disease. We've tested the technologies for viral suppression, the technologies for treatment of TB and ARVs, and now we have also tested the new drugs, you know, for TB preventive therapy. We no longer have treatment TB preventive therapy going on for 9 months. It's now 3 months, you know, once a week for 3 months. The treatment for DRTB has been reduced from 18 months now to about 6 months, and you know, these are great pilot tests that have happened, but the implementation of these interventions is becoming a problem. So I would like to see more funding for implementation research to ensure that we implement all these interventions that have got evidence of effectiveness. So if research has shown that this thing is working, for example, once we have a vaccine in place or new technologies in place, like the INSTI, like the HIV rapid recency assay, and the plasma separation cards, and all these exciting new drugs, we need to have implementation programs going on. And there are very strong NGOs like PATH, the Oram Institute, and many others that have worked on advocacy to ensure that we would implement all these interventions.
I think that's really perfect and puts a very clear message for the European Union and for other international parties that play an important role in supporting Africa's capacity development in clinical research, in regulatory strengthening and regulatory harmonization. So I think we all need to take that note, and it's definitely an area where DSW is focusing its advocacy efforts, because we see the need and we see the demand that comes from you, from our partners, from the researchers on the ground. So we hope to that this podcast interview makes our small contribution to raising awareness on these very important issues that need to be addressed urgently.
Yep, and I think at that point we'll wrap it up for today. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks to our two guests for coming on. We look forward to continuing this conversation with you and with colleagues in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Wolf.
And that's it for today's episode of African Research Excellence, DSW in Conversation. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and all good podcast platforms. You can find more information about DSW at dsw.org and across our social channels on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Until next time.